we did or didn't talk about. So let's review. Last week we spoke about the fish of the Shabbos. And we spoke about the the source of heat, which has to be fire, as opposed to sun, and then we spoke a little about microwaves in that context. Let's review. Last week we spoke about the Bishul B'Shabbos. And we spoke about the source of heat, which has to be fire, as opposed to sun, and then we spoke a little about microwaves in that context. We spoke about the principle of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, two different understandings of that principle. One difference being if it was half cooked, subsequently cooked on Shabbos. And the flip side might be a difference if it was cooked in the sun or a microwave and then cooked again on Shabbos. Is Ein Bishul Achar Bishul a matter of fact or is it a matter of halacha? Of course, it's a matter of fact that halacha depends upon that fact, obviously. We spoke at length, if I recall correctly, about klisheni. What's the status of klisheni? Briefly, klisheni, the Gemara is explicit that klisheni ain't no vasha. Klisheni does not cook. And the question is that how far do we go with that principle? We mentioned that Tosus explained that klisheni is not a vasha because the walls are cold, as opposed to klisheni, which was a, wasn't a fire, the walls are hot. And we asked the question, not mine, the Rashi asked the question, how could it be you take cold water and put it into boiling water and a klisheni, the water, cold water will get very, very hot? So we mentioned an answer which I saw in Rabbi Eider's sefer, that a klisheni is an abnormal fashion of cooking. It's not normally done. It's called a kalafiyata or a shima. And we explained, a little bit differently than Rabbi Eider himself, that although we do not find that something which is abnormal is permitted, he suggests maybe you do sometimes, I deny that. It's not permitted, it's only us and the Rabbanan. We suggest that maybe in this case they were permitted klisheni completely, what we call a low plume. No distinctions. They wanted to make those, make it easy for you. The klisheni, they said it's an abnormal fashion of cooking. So therefore, and since, I should add, and since in most foods, klisheni doesn't even achieve cooking, and the Gemara says klisheni ain't a mavasho, so they said it's permissible. And even if you find an unusual circumstance in which the klisheni might actually cause cooking, such as water, but water we know that it does in fact cause cooking, that's what it seems. If you put cold water into hot water, the heat gets very hot. Nevertheless, it's permissible. This is the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch maintains that klisheni is permissible across the board. Only time when the Shulchan Aruch said that it's not permissible is bread. And bread is just a bit of an irony, as we explained last week, because bread has already been baked. But the Shulchan Aruch quotes the stringency that Yesh Bishul Achar Afir. This is all review. If anything I didn't say last week, you better stop me, because I'm pretty sure this is all said. The Shulchan Aruch said that Yesh Bishul Achar Afir, quote the Sav, Yesh Omrim, and he expresses that the stringency should be maintained not only in a klirishon, even in a klisheni. What's so special about bread? So we explain that bread is the normal way to heat up bread. If you're ever going to do it, it's in a klisheni. You don't usually put baked goods in a klirishon. That's number one. Number two, the baked good is more easily and more readily cooked. Because it's very soft, usually bakers are fairly soft, and therefore they're more readily cooked. So for this reason, the stringency is recommended by the Shulchan Aruch, not even to put the bread into a klisheni. Again, it's a normal kind of a thing, and it's easily cooked. So therefore, all the leniency which we mentioned earlier, it usually doesn't cook, and it's abnormal anyway, may not apply in the situation of bread. We also pointed out that the Mishnah Mogen Avraham and the Mishnah Berurah have a more strict view. They maintain that one may not put anything in a klishen for one of two reasons. Either because klishen is nirik of avash, it looks like it cooks, or because we're not expert in what cooks easily and what does not cook easily. And you may make a mistake and put something which is easily cooked, which is not permitted to a klishen. You may put it in a klishen by mistake. And therefore they said nothing doing. Only two exceptions, which everyone agrees is okay. One is water, which is found in the Shulchan Aruch explicitly, and one is spices, havli. What's so special about spices? So we maintain that neither of the two reasons, which is advanced by the Mishnah Berurah and others, in order to prohibit klishen, it would apply. What are the two reasons? What are the two reasons we said before? One, because easily cooked, and two, because it looks like it's cooking. Neither applies to a tablet. Not easily cooked because it's a big, fat root or spice, so it's hard. It doesn't cook too easily, that's number one. And as far as giving the appearance of being cooked, it doesn't apply either because you're cooking the chicken, you're cooking the potatoes, you're not cooking the spice. So therefore, it's not nearer to Mavashal either. This being the case, we came to a conclusion that these leniency does not apply nowadays. Because nowadays, spices are generally speaking put in when they're already ground and very soft and easily cooked. And what's worse, in the case of something such as tea, even though tea might be viewed as a spice, but tea, the only thing which goes to the cup is tea. There's nothing else there. And you're cooking something else. So therefore, although Rav Moshe Feinstein has made some kind of a suggestion that maybe it should be permissible to put tea in a klisheni, it's not accepted. The other post can say, okay, I either explain, we don't accept it for those reasons, that the tea is number one, soft, the tea leaves are very soft, they're not big hard pieces. Number two, there's nothing else in the cup but the tea, so it gives the appearance of cooking the tea. Alright, am I correct with all this discussed last week? I just want to make sure, because I don't want to go ahead without, it's better to repeat and review this very fundamental thing, you know, won't hurt anybody. Yes? Yeah, thank you for reminding me. I remember to talk about. Okay. Alright. Did we discuss Klishlishi last week? A little bit, right? Yeah, I may have mentioned to you last week that Rav Moshe Feinstein had a leniency about Klishlishi. The Klishlishi, you know, is not so bad. My Rabbi Rav Soloveitchik thought that's wrong. He said that there's nothing to do with Klisheni, Klishlishi, Klirevi, Klichamishi. It's all the same. It's either Klirishin or anything beyond. And therefore, he maintained that one should not make tea even in a klishlishi. And I added, especially according to my understanding, based on what Rabbi Ida said, to make it even worse when it comes to tea. Because tea is usually, not usually, often made in a klishlishi. How so? If you put it on the fire, you put it in a fancy silver pitcher, put the fancy silver pitcher into the cup, and you put the tea in. People do that on a Tuesday night. People do that. So you can't consider that to be an abnormal method of cooking. So that's why I don't believe it should be done that way at all. Yes? Herbal tea, I don't think it's cooked either. But if it is cooked, it'll make a big difference. You have to go check the facts out. Call the company and ask them if it was cooked. As a matter of fact, I'm not so sure. Maybe you can help me with this one. What about spices? Are spices pre-cooked when they're processing? I'm not so sure it's pre-cooked. But the pepper. Salt is cooked. That's a fact. Salt is cooked when they're in the processing. What about pepper? Not sure. Be a big difference. Can you put pepper into your soup? I have a son. He's crazy. One of my sons comes to the table Shabbos Friday night. You have chicken soup. He goes to the kitchen, takes out a pepper, and starts throwing pepper into the soup. Never heard this before. I never saw such a crazy thing. But if the pepper is cooked, it's fine. Not cooked, we'll have to stop as soon as it turns bar mitzvah. I don't want him to rely on these leniencies. Our Moshe says it's okay. It's shlishi also. But I don't know how happy with that. So He do have to find a pepper is cooked, or the stop it turns out it's one of the two. So speak to the spice companies, find out what it's all about. My wife's not happy with it anyway. She takes the pepper to the table. That's a different story. Okay. So how do you make tea on Shabbos? Let's get to the bottom line. How do you make tea? We didn't discuss that last week. Now what do you do? So the only two agents that I know of to make tea on Shabbos. It's as simple as instant tea. It may not be very tasty, but it's the easiest way according to the halacha to make tea is to make an instant. How does this work? Well, the instant tea is already pre-cooked. It's pre-cooked. Should be no problem. The Poskim do say, however, that when a person makes instant tea, or coffee for that matter, the better way to do it is to first put in the water into the cliché, to take the kettle and put the urn, fill up the cup, and only after that's filled you put in the tea or the coffee. Why? What happens to the principle of what? No? Hey, Bishop, Achar Bishop. So the answer is, well, this tea or coffee very quickly becomes dissolved, it becomes a liquid. As we shall see soon, liquids have a different status when it comes to this principle. So they've developed a certain stringency that maybe we should ideally be a little bit strict when it comes to things which become liquid immediately. And therefore the custom is to first put in the water, then put in the instant coffee or instant tea, after the water's been cleaned. Yes?
Sorry, the thing with the pepper, even if your bowl is a cliché, still not okay, right?
If the pepper is raw instead of the cooked. I'm not sure about those facts. I meant today to call the company. I don't call the company. I just called people to give a shkaka to the company and find out from them what's going on, but I forgot.
And so
if anyone here can find out before next week, I'm trying to forget again. So let me know.
What if the soup isn't like
Yatzalev? Then it's alright. The soup is not Yatzalev, no problem. The soup can be very hot. You can burn your tongue in the soup. It's happened to me more than once. So it could be very hot.
And salt's not a problem.
Salt's not a problem because salt is cooked. That's one way. There's another way to make tea on Shabbat. That's called what they call scents, which is literally essence, the essence of tea. What do you do with the essence of tea? What are you doing? It means before Shabbat, you take tea and you make it kind of a tea concentrate. A lot of bags of tea and relatively small amount of water. You cook it up completely on the fire. And now you have tea concentrate, which has already been fully cooked. It's very important to be fully cooked on the fire. So now, because it's fully cooked on the fire, according to the Pesach on the Mishnah Berurah, it's permissible to put it into a kli sheni. That means you have this tea set cooked on Friday or Thursday, whenever you cook it. Put it in the refrigerator. Now it's ice cold. You may still take it out of the refrigerator, this tea essence, and pour a little bit of that into a cup filled with very, very hot water. And that's permissible. Why is that permissible? Well, permissible for the following reasons, as the Mishnah Berurah. Number one, it's klisheni. And even though the Mishnah Berurah is not so happy about cooking liquids in a klisheni, the Mishnah Berurah only permits cooking water in a klisheni, which is what the Shulchan Aruch says, and the Mogan Abrami tends to agree to it. The Mishnah Berurah does not allow cooking other liquids in a klisheni. You remember we mentioned this last week, the Alta Lubavitcher Rebbe considers all liquids to be the same as water. The Mishnah Berurah does not. He thinks you cannot cook other liquids in a klisheni. But that's only if they were never cooked before. But if they were once cooked before, then the Mishnah Berurah accepts a lenient position and says, look, the whole matter of Bishalach or Bishal Balach, which we'll discuss later, is a matter of controversy. Some say yes and some say no. And the idea of klisheni is again a controversy. Some say yes, some say no. So we don't combine the stringency. We don't combine the stringency of Bishalach or Bishal Balach, which we'll discuss later, with the stringency of klisheni Mavashal, which we already discussed. So therefore, if you have liquids which were cooked and then they cooled down, they can be put into a cliche. This is the Pesach of the Mishnah Berurah. According to the Alta Lubavitcher Rebbe, you can take any liquid which is never cooked and put it into a cli into a cliche. You mentioned last week that Rav Neuwirth quotes the Chacham Echad. Did I mention last week? The Chacham Echad who claims that the explicit thing in Shulchan Aruch said that the Shar Mashkim are the same as water. And I told you that I don't think it's a proof at all, because the Shulchan Aruch is matter everything in the cliche. The whole dispute between the Alter Rebbe and the Mishnah Berurah was within the opinion of the Magen Avraham, who was more strict with the concept of cliche. As we already mentioned last week. But this is a Yevei Lamais, either with sense, which you put into a Klisheni after the water is already into the Klisheni, or you can use instant tea. And even there you should put it into a Klisheni as opposed to pouring on it, because of the reasons we mentioned before. Now you gotta make tea, Baruch Hashem. Now you're ready to go make tea on Shabbos. But, questions which I was just reminded we have to discuss now, which is, what happens, I don't know what happened to you last week, it's a long Friday night, it wasn't cold, you see, it wasn't cold yet, so maybe this week will be cold, it'll be a cold Friday night, and someone is given tea, and they have the tea, great, still cold, but they have a refill. Now the bottom of the tea, there's some drops left from the first cup. Those drops, if you leave them exposed to the air, after 1 minute they become room temperature. You drink up 99.9% of the cup, then leave 0.01%. After 2 seconds, a half a minute, it's already room temperature. May you pour boiling water, or boiling tea, or very hot water, hot tea, onto those drops. Those drops are now going to become very, very hot. Now, here we have to introduce a new concept called Irui. Was mentioned last week very briefly. What does Irui mean? What does Irui mean? Pouring. There's a major dispute. What is halachic status of Irui? We can use the expression Irui Kli Rishon, which means Irui Mi Kli Rishon. Pouring from a Kli Rishon. Of course, the urn is a Kli Rishon and the kettle is a Kli Rishon. But they are or were on the fire. What's halachic status of these things? So, Shulchan Aruch says we have to be strict. They're not permitted to allow it. Shulchan Aruch is in Sif Yud, she is best. Also, lit in Tavon Bekara, Velaras Aleha Mikli Rishon. You're not allowed to pour from a Kli Rishon on a spice. But we just got through saying earlier today and last week that spices, at least at the time of the Gemara, and the hot spices, were not cookable in the Kli Sheni. That's the one thing which is permissible. The answer is, it's not Kli Sheni. It's Irud. The Shulchan Aruch clearly maintains that Irui is not a cliche. Irui is the status of least Lechumra as a Kli Rishon. And therefore you may not pour boiling, hot water or hot liquid over anything which has been uncooked, because it may cause cooking. Now, 1 second. If you put these two stringencies together, you're getting right into trouble. What two stringencies? Yesh, Bishel, Achar, Bishel, Vadar, Olah. That they can be cooking after cooking in something which is liquid. And what? Irui is the Kli Rishon. You put those two together, then if you pour the hot tea over the little droplets of tea, which has now been cooled off, you are in violation of a Torah prohibition of Issa Mavasha Medaraisa. Figure it out. One and one is two. If Irui is like a Kli Rishon, and Yesh Bishel Acha Bishel B'Dav Olach, so bingo, so you're in violation of Bishel. So how do you do it? So when I asked you, if you do it, everyone nodded their head, no. But the answer is yes, you're allowed to do it. Why would I do it? Unless you're a Sephardim. Any Sephardim here? Okay. So everyone knew what was allowed to do. What's Sephardim? What's this discrimination over here? And it's very simple. The Sephardim follow the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo. Rabbi Yosef Karo passes unequivocally that Yesh Bishel Acha Bishel B'Dav Olach. Sit down. Yesh Bishel Acha Bishel B'Dav. Finished. The Ramah, however, disagrees. The Ramah was known as the great compromiser. The Ramah in Sif Tezvav says that we adopt the position, this is how most Mepharshim interpret the Ramah, that any Bishel Acha Bishel B'Dav Olach permissible, even though it's liquid. However, we've accepted a stringency that if the liquid became cooled down to room temperature, then we do not reheat it. To compromise, if the liquid cooled down a little bit, now let's say it's 100 degrees, 100 degrees is way above room temperature, so we hope so. But on the other hand, it's not yet the lettuce bulb. Not too hard to touch. The Ramah says that it reached 100 degrees, for argument's sake, then you may reheat it. If, however, it reaches, let's call it 70 degrees, but plummeted so far down to room temperature, then you may not reheat it. Now, makes no sense. Why should this be so? So most authorities interpret the Chazanish among them, that the Ramah is really paskin, he really rules that ain bishul achar bishul b'davrala. That's the real halacha. But he introduced an extra chumrah, not to read something which is been completely cooled down to room temperature, and it has to do with the topic which we're going to be discussing later, called hachazara. Hachazara means putting things on the fire directly, which is not allowed in the room. We'll get to that later. So that's the case. Well, just 1 minute. I'll leave you 1 minute. If that's the case, the later posts can say as follows. Since this idea that we are strict and say that Yesh Bishul Acha Bishul B'Davar La, it's not that we really hold that way. No, we don't hold that way. We held that way, we have to be strict even if it was 100 degrees. Since we are leaning on 100 degrees, this indicates that we pass in Ein Bishul Acha Bishul B'Davar La. It's just a stringency which we accepted upon ourselves not to read liquids once they reach down to room temperature. So we only accepted the stringency in a normal case, where you are heating up these cold liquids with the intention to heat them up. That's what you want. You're in large quantity. Then the rabbis prohibited it. However, those few little drops left in the bottom of the first cup of tea, for this the rabbis did not introduce their prohibition, their scripture. Listen, it's only a few drops. Doesn't really matter that much. It's just a small amount. So we just disregard it. For this reason, most poskim maintain it's permissible to refill that cup of tea. Again, it's permissible to refill it because really deep down, we are of the opinion that ein bishul acha bishul b'davar la. It's a stringency, and if it's only a stringency, it was only imposed in a regular case where you're actually heating it up straight. Now we just pour in a second cup, and incidentally, a number of drops are reheated. Yes, I'm sorry. No? I can't hear you. Salad is much more lenient. Salad, we have a principle called Ein Bishul Achar Bishul V'Davar Yavish. So if you take something which is solid and cooled, it was cooked completely and it was cooled down, and now you reheat it on Shabbos, we'll see the details how you do that, then we assume there's no subsequent bishul. Chillant on what? Oh. That's the difference. It's called double gush. We'll get to that later. Yes? Exactly. I think we may have mentioned that last week. Soup ladle, what happens? You take a soup ladle, and you get out the hot soup, and you pour out one bowl. Good? Now you left at the bottom of the ladle a couple of drops. It's very possible. In the 10 seconds that it takes you, from the time you empty out the ladle, and until you go back to the soup bowl the second time, could be those little drops cool down. It cools down very quickly, a few drops. Now you put it back into the pot of soup to get the second bowl of soup. How do you do that? So the answer would be the same answer. It's only a few drops, it's not really your concern, it doesn't really matter that much. So therefore, the stringency of the Chazal was never imposed.
Even if
it's been a few minutes. Yes? The essence, the reason why it's permissible is twofold. Number one, it's already been completely cooked before Shabbos, right? And number two, it's put into a kli sheni. Put into a kli sheni, so then we're lenient. You're right, we wouldn't allow someone to pour the boiling water over the TS. Because there he has intention to cook that very TS. He's aiming for that. In our case, if we have the few drops of tea, the few drops of chicken soup, he's not aiming for those few drops. They just happen to be in the way. They happen to be in the way. As a matter of fact, there's even no term of use for that. Who knows what the term is? Something's in your way. You don't really want it. You don't really care about it so much. Anybody know what that's called? No, we haven't went through the basics of the Shabbos. We went right into the details, not the basics. It's okay. It's called a davar she'eino miskaven. You don't really want. That's not really your main intention. Your intention is not to heat up those few drops, or to heat up those in the ladle or the bottle. Okay, you want to just pour tea. But the problem. There's a counterpoint, if you will, davar she'eino miskaven. What's that called? A psikresha. You know about this, no? Psikresha means that it's like you cut off the head of the bird. I don't want the head of the bird to die. Right? It doesn't work that way. That's a psikresha. Psikresha knocks out the dispensation of davar she'eino miskaven. So therefore it should come out that it's no good. So it really would be no good. The only reason why it's good, we're saying, is because we basically hold an ein bishlach abishlach b'davolach. I should add, that there are those who wish to permit this based upon the rules of Eina Miskaven and Psikresha. In one of two ways, both of which I find somewhat problematic. One way is to say that the Psikresha is the lo nichale. You hear that expression? The lo nichale. I don't really want it. I don't really want it. I don't want these drops to be heated. That's what Moshe Feinstein suggests. I don't think it's true. In fact, can you imagine, I don't usually drink hot tea, but can you imagine someone's drinking hot tea, a hot soup that I do have, all of a sudden, right smack in the middle is an ice cube. You wouldn't want that. It's cold. You want to drink hot now. So you want those little drops to become heated. You wouldn't want those room temperature drops to remain in the middle of your piping hot cup of tea or a cup of soup, or a bowl of soup. I don't see why it's going to equal it. I don't see it. Yeah?
In any case, it would definitely not be
lo nicha, they would be more important. Yeah, but that's true. Lo ichpas, they don't care about it. But most authorities say that lo ichpas and lo nicha, whether you don't care, whether you have a negative feeling, it's all the same. That's how most authorities maintain. And then, so another sharp idea. I think Rabbi Ivan's book. This is sharp. This is really sharp. You may have learned once about the situation where there's a box. And I want to cover the box. There's a box, there's food in the box, and I want to cover the box. But maybe there are flies in the box. You know about that? It's positive about it. Maybe there are flies. I can't see. I look at the bottom of the box, a big box. Flies, no flies. I don't know. I sit around and do a search to look for flies. I gotta just cover the box the way it is. I'm not interested in catching any flies. So some say yes, and some say no. Those who say no say maybe it's a creation. If there are flies there, it's not allowed. Usually psikresha is definite. Right? Here it's not definite. Maybe there are no flies there. So some say it's permissible, because maybe there are no flies there. Others say no. When do we say it's not called a psikresha? Where the doubt is in the future tense. For example, the case of the Gemara. I'm allowed to pull a desk along the ground. Maybe it will make a ditch. Maybe it won't make a ditch. I don't know. So therefore, it's not a psik ratio, so therefore it's okay. Because the doubt is in the future. Here the doubt is in the past. I didn't say, well, maybe it will trap flies, maybe it won't trap flies. That's already a matter of fact. Either there are flies there or no flies there. But some say it's not even considered a name of the sky, but it's called a psik ratio. And the Taz says it's permissible, back and forth about this issue. So some authorities say like this. We're not sure about the facts. Either the facts we don't know about is what? Are there flies or are there no flies? They are physical facts. In our case, we're not sure the halakhic facts. Is yesh bishalach habishabalach or then bishalach habishabalach? We never resolve that. Since we never resolve that, so it becomes like a kind of a suffix segregation, like the case of the flies. And since in the case of the flies, there are those who have accepted a lenient position, but the summit psikresha is not considered a psikresha, it's called davar she'eino miskaven. So the same amount applies to this case. It's a summit psikresha because the summit is din in halacha. whether we hold yesh mishalach abishal or en mishalach abishal balach. We don't know. So that's another reason why we can put the second cup of tea under the first cup, on top of the remnants of the first cup, put the ladle of soup back into the pot, etc., etc. This is already not so obvious that a suffix in din is the same as a suffix in fact but flies. But that's what some Sifas of Frank said originally in some different context. But that's what another reason. Bottom line, whatever the reason is, I'll feed in. It's permissible to put the second cup of tea on top of the remnants of the first cup and to return the ladle with a few drops on it into the pot of chicken soup. Okay, if you have any questions, that's a good time to ask. Yes?
Sorry, I'm a little confused. The whole question...
You're only a little confused, that's pretty good.
The whole question that even if it was already been changed to or not, wouldn't that only apply if you're doing it from the Kli Rishon or Iyur Kli Rishon? Like, if you put...
Right. That's what we're talking about over here.
Oh.
Iyur Kli Rishon, taking the kettle for directly out of
if you put your water from the kettle into this nice silver pitcher, there's no... Even
right.
If
I'm assuming a poor man's version of tea. Not no silver pitchers. Silver pitcher would make
a
much better.
Clay pitcher.
No picture. He's taking it straight from the kettle.
Okay.
Yes. I can't hear you at all. No, it's Klevishan proper. Still permissive. And for the same reason we mentioned before. You're right. Before I presented, I made a combination of controversies. Here, it's no combination. We permit it anyway. Correct. Well said. Okay. Yes. Sure. We have rules and regulations, the basics. If I do action A, which may or may not cause result B is prohibited. Action A, we don't know, action A is intrinsically permissible. That's called the Dovah She'enu Miskavet. I don't want to have B. May or may not happen, that's permissible. If B will inevitably result, that's called obsecration. So if a guy wants to cut off the head of the bird for a plaything for his child, he doesn't want the animal to die, the bird to die. It's ridiculous. But that's prohibited. Here I have an in-between case. I want to cover the box and to preserve the food. There may or may not be flies in the box. So here, it's sort of an in-between kind of a thing. On the one hand, it's not definite that he's going to be in violation of trapping flies. On the other hand, the doubt is not future-oriented. I'm going to do A, which is dragging a bench. It may or may not cause a ditch, depending on what happens, what angle it hits the dirt, how hard the dirt, which place it will go on. All kinds of imponderables. Here, as a matter of fact, either there are flies in the box or there are no flies in the box. We just don't know what the facts are. But that's a dispute. Some say it's okay. If that's okay, then the extension might be, the same as we're not sure what the rule is in a doubt in fact, it may be the permissible doubt in law, namely, is yesh mishalach abishal balach or en mishalach abishal balach. So therefore, there is room to be lenient according to Rabbi Ayin's understanding. That's how we close. All right, whatever it is, we give three different reasons why. The first one's the best. And we know that we generally speak, we accept the ruling of en mishalach abishal balach. We only are strict in this funny case over here, where it's a major item, the pouring of water over the tea scents, and things of this nature. Then we have this cold, we took adopted astringency. It's small, just small amount of drops, the astringency was never accepted. Okay? That's the simplest way to explain it. Great. We're all on an even keel now. Everything's good. It's important. You have to understand the reasons for these things. Otherwise, you're not going to know what to do. One little thing's going to change, and you're going to say, well, I never learned this. You learn some of the basics behind it, then you can try at least to figure out from one case to the next. Alright? Your doctor should ask. You should still have some basis for it. Okay. Now, we come to another stringency. Quoted the Shulchan Aruch. You're not permitted to take uncooked liquids. Let's say cold liquids, you never cooked, and put them near the fire even though you intend to leave it there just for a short period of time, so that it should become lukewarm, for fear that you'll forget and leave it there for a long time. So the Gatat. I told you it happened to me when I was warming baby bottles. I wanted to leave it there for a short time, and I forgot, and it got very, very hot. Of course, I was all right, in my case, for two reasons. Number one, the milk or the baby form has already been cooked. And we said that we strictly speak, we pass the what? Ein bishul, acha bishul b'lach. And number two, I didn't think we shady. So that was also okay. But if a guy, someone's doing it opposite the fire, it was never cooked before, you shouldn't even leave it there for a short period of time for fear you're going to forget. This is called the Shulchan Aruch. People do forget. I'm trying to experience with my own experience. I forgot. But I did it in the way I protected myself. But, otherwise, it would not be permitted. All right. Now we come to another stringency. We keep getting more and more stringencies. This is another one. This is a humdinger. Shulchan Aruch says at the end of the very end of the siman, don't dish out a liquid don't stir a liquid on which is on the fire. Don't stir a liquid on the fire. Why not? Does it make sense? Has it already been fully cooked? I'm talking about it's fully cooked here. It's already been fully cooked. So what could be bad? It's already been cooked. What's going on over here? We're not exactly sure why this is so. But nevertheless, the stringency is found. Shulchan Aruch not to do it. We don't know why. We just don't understand why. The Mishabur doesn't understand why. Why should you be so strict? But nevertheless, the Ramah quotes the stringency not to stir. And the Mishnah Berurah says, well, you shouldn't stir, but you are permitted to dish out. Dishing out, although it inevitably involves a slight bit of stirring, you don't have to go that far, and you don't have to be strict in that kind of a case. It's very lemaisa. Most people have the custom not even to dish out when it's on the fire. We mentioned this last week briefly. You take the soup, the chicken soup. The custom is very pervasive to first remove the chicken soup from the fire and then dish out. When it's on the fire, it's preferred that you don't even dish out. It's not from just regular stirring. This has ramifications. I told you this, I believe, last week. That is, maybe not. It's a reminder. There's a big dispute about a ladle. Okay, what is a ladle? A ladle is a derision or a ladle is a cliche. It's a ladle, I told you, it's on the fire, but it's not there for a long period of time. What do you do? So, most posts agree that this dispute is only in a case in which you put the ladle into the pot while it's on the fire. You put the ladle into the pot after it's removed from the fire, and the ladle is a klisheni, and then the soup is a klishlishi, and then whenever we can have any klishlishi leniency, which is a combination of other controversies, such as bishul acharafia we mentioned last week, and other such things, then we have the right to be lenient. This is an important point. You may have heard that no one can stir on the fire, no one can take a dish off the fire. Not quite true. Stirring is an extremity which we've accepted, though we don't know the reason why. Just dishing out is, strictly speaking, permissible. And there's just a custom to be strict in this matter. If you have no alternative, it's okay. I'll give you an example. We have a crockpot. You have a crockpot and you have cholin. Now, cholin, I guess it depends what kind of family you come from. Cholin solid, cholin liquid, I don't know what the, whatever it is. Let's say I have a liquidy cholin. You know, there's just some amount of liquid there. And it's in a crock pot. And it's a one-piece crock pot, even one piece. The element in the pot is the same thing. You can't remove it from the fire. There's no way. yeah, you roof fire by pouring it out, but you're pouring it out from the fire. There's no alternative, so the false can say it's permissible to use such a thing. Because there's just no choice. So although we have this frequency, it's been widely accepted, even though we don't really know why, not just pour things out of a pot while it's on the fire. If there's no alternative, then it's permissible to be done.
To stir it also?
No, stir it would be better. Stir it, we just take the chunk out. Stir it would be better to be avoided. Yes?
Just one question. I understand, for stirring not on the fire, is that allowed or not?
For stirring not on the fire, then I think the custom is to permit it. Again, assume it's completely and fully cooked.
And to dish it out even from the fire, then we're saying that's like a
lenient. It's permissible, strictly speaking, if you can avoid it, the custom is to avoid it. If you can't avoid it, you're allowed to do it. Not to buy a new crock pot. Yes?
Uncovering
water on
the
fire?
Yeah, just uncovering it. Is that related to
stirring? Uncovering is certainly the question the other way around. Can you recover it?
That's happening to be right.
Right. Some say recovering is the same as stirring it. Different opinions on that. The whole thing, see, when there's something that you don't understand, it's hard to explain, you know, what it's all about. If you don't fully understand, which the world doesn't understand this. He says, he doesn't understand. Why should it be a problem? So, it's hard to mention, know whether the covering is included in that stringency if you don't understand in the first place. Yes? We are not to that yet.
I don't know,
when
people think, wouldn't that be the same type of thing where if it's fully cooked,
to
have the same question
of why it's in the world? No, I have an answer for it. We'll get to that. I have an answer for that. Yes? Whoa, bless, the dirty word. We're not up to that yet. We're just on basics over here. We're purposely learning as fresh as we can all of our luckas that have nothing to do with bless before we start with the bless story. That's what we say for less. That's maybe the most practical part of it. Let's say that for less. Yes?
So, if you have a one-piece pot and you have chalice, can you recover it?
The answer is yes. Sure, because there's no way they'll know, otherwise it'll dry out. No, that's considered to be no alternative.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, you mentioned before Dumba Gush, I'm going to get back to it. This Dumba Gush story is an interesting dispute. We mentioned last week that the reason why Clearish, Shani, different than Clearish is because the walls are cold. Remember that? Closest to the walls are cold. Now, there is an opinion that states that the walls are cold has no impact on solids, or insignificant impact on solids. Why? For a simple reason. Liquids assume the shape of their receptacle. If you have a cup, a tall cup, then the soup will go in the tall cup. If you have a flat bowl, it'll go in the flat bowl. It always, you know, adheres to the surfaces. If the surfaces are hot, it'll be hot. If it's cold, it'll be cold. So that's why the distinction is too shame. But solids, take a big chunk of potato, a big chunk of meat, so it's on a hot plate, it's on a cold plate, doesn't matter that much because it's only touching the plate from one of the six sides, right? Only from the bottom, the side, the top. It's exposed to the air. It's not exposed to, it's not impacted upon by whether the plate or the whatever, the dish, the bowl, whatever it may be, is hot or cold. So therefore there's a formula which is quoted, treat a dove or a gush as a kli rishon, even if it is in fact in the second, third, fourth kli. That's known as the chumrah of the Marashal, quoted by the Magen Avraham. It's a chumrah. Not everyone agrees to it. Not everyone accepts it. But ideally, of course, it's a stringent which is found in the poskim. It should be adhered to. However, we go back to my old rule, which is we don't combine stringencies. We don't call one thing on top of the other. For this reason, the post can say, let's say for argument's sake, you have, what you might want to use, lemon juice, or maybe even ketchup. Ketchup is maybe it's a liquidy ketchup, might be treated as a liquid. And you want to put this juice or this ketchup or something of that consistency, or even more liquidy, you want to put it on top of your potato, or on top of your hot piece of chicken, a hot piece of meat, which is a which is now on a plate on your Shabbos table. So at first the answer is no, because it's a kli, it's a double gush, solid, even if it doesn't kli sheni, it's a status of a kli rishon, and you're not allowed to do it. But the answer is that it's permissible. And the reason is as follows. Because all the items that I mentioned have already been pre-cooked. The lemon juice is pre-cooked, and the ketchup is pre-cooked, all these are pre-cooked. And we already pointed out earlier that strictly speaking we are of the opinion that ein bishalach habishal b'davolach. We only accept the stringency to treat it as something which, where there is bishalach habishal. We don't combine that stringency with the stringency of double gush. And therefore you may put cooked liquids on top of your chicken or hot potato in your Shabbos plate, but you should not put items which have never been cooked on that double gush. And here we go back to our spices. You take the pepper and put it on the meat or on the chicken. It depends. If the pepper has been cooked in advance, and again, I apologize, I forgot the call today to find out. Are there any other spices that are used commonly except the pepper on the table? Garlic on the table, yeah. See, my same son takes garlic too, I think. I think so. Yeah, someone else is here. So there's only one in the world who did that. Okay. So, do you want to check out garlic or pepper, anything else? One for checking. What else do you use on the table? What? Garlic and pepper. That's it. Okay. Onion chowder, what do you say? Use that as also on the table.
Yeah.
Why don't we?
Why do we?
I told you why. Because the reason why we're lenient.
What about
like
oregano and
parsley?
Like oregano and
parsley
stuff that may be used around the kitchen, but not
at
the season.
Would you put it on the kitchen on Friday or on Shabbos?
No, on Shabbos.
Oh yeah? Whoops, got to head to the list. Someone make me a list. Do me a favor, I'll put the paper. All the spice that are added to foods on Shabbos. I'll make a phone call to that. And I come back next week with a checklist. This is cooked, this is not cooked, this is cooked, this is not cooked, to know what to do. Okay? It's relevant, A. It's relevant if you're going to put it into your soup, right? We explained before. And it's relevant if you're going to put it into your special. block. Gush HaTrefet says block. As in Gush HaTzion, right? Etzion block. You know, the block has to be a block. Could be called
back to the
block.
So it doesn't depend on what food it is, whether it really retains its heat or not?
Could be, you're right, I'm not sure. I haven't heard of that, but could be, you're right. Okay. Now I will tell you what block. Gush is translated as block. As in Gush Etzion, right? Etzion's block. You know, the block has to be a block.
So it does depend on what food it is, whether it really retains its heat or not?
Could be your right, I'm not sure. I never heard of that, but could be your right. Okay. Now I will tell you one of my whoppers. Everyone's had a couple of whoppers. I have this one of mine. Yes.
Sorry, what about butter?
Butter is cooked, pre-cooked.
So you can put that on too. Why do I remember learning that you're supposed to cut the potato first?
Cut the potato first. Well, that's what you learn. It's not a block after you cut it in half.
No, maybe. No. Very
much to cut up into like fourths or
eighths. Oh, that's not a double gush at all then. I'll tell you the truth, actually, even that's a double gush. I don't see why I should make a difference.
You usually hate when you cut it up.
Oh, even in fact, if I'm looking at the lettuce bulb. I don't think that's true either. I think butter is cooked. Maybe it is really cooked. They don't have to cook it. It's pasteurized. How can it not be cooked?
I think it was that maybe because butter, like when you
change
it into a liquid, when it's melting, so then it's changing
state? That's a problem. That's a different problem. If you change state, that's again a problem. Are you allowed to change state and make it, that's a machlokes the other way around. It's Sfaradim and Ashkenazim. No Sfaradim, they're too bad. Here the Sfaradim are lenient. And Ashkenazim are strict. And there are more parts of Chumah not to change states from solid to liquid, which we'll get to later.
You can put margarine on potato.
What?
You can put margarine on potato
and there may be those who will be strict on the ground that you're changing its state, it's going to melt.
And that's what cooking it again.
Not do cooking, not do cooking, even if it's all cold. It will melt, it will be a problem.
I think what you're saying is that, like, the same thing with coffee, that when it turns into liquid, so we're mopping on the coffee, so it's close to the same thing.
Yeah, we did learn
about it. Because it melts.
Could be. The butter sweet is a liquid.
Yeah.
In my opinion, it's butter anyway. Even if it is a liquid, because we don't combine all these stringencies, a fish lach, a fish lach, and double gush. I think it's butter. Fine. See, I have, if you listen to me, you can't get the good news and the bad news. You see, you don't have to listen to me, but if you want to listen to me, there's some, I have some leniency and some stringency. That's how whatever, every rabbi has his own thing. This one's gonna really, watch out. We already explained that ein bishul acha bishul b'davar lach. That's how we basically rule. Although we're strict, but you know, there's room to be lenient in combination with other things. How do you define bishul when it comes to davar lach? So we started talking about it a little bit last time. The definition of bishul when it comes to davar lach is yad zeletzbo. How hot is yad zeletzbo? We discussed a little bit also. Estimates vary from about 115, 120 degrees on one side, 160, 170 on the other side. That is wildly varying estimates of yad zeletzbo. So it goes without saying, everyone agrees, you know, not only me, everyone agrees that the only way it's permissible to reheat water on Shabbos, or if it was already cooked before, if it was heated before, is if it reached yad zeletzbo for sure. It has to reach 100, let's say 160, 170 degrees, then and only then could you reheat it on Shabbos. If it was didn't reach that amount, then maybe it was never really cooked. And then there's no way in the world that you could permit reheating it on Shabbos. Because it may not be considered bishul after bishul, it may be considered bishul for the first time. And therefore, even if you never let it get down to room temperature, you always kept it a little bit above room temperature, it would still be prohibited to make it very hot for the first time on Shabbos. In other words, if it let's say reached 140 degrees on Friday, if you knew for a fact that 140 was yad zeletzbo, you'd be okay according to this principle. Because we don't know, 150 we don't know, 160, that's where Moshe Feinstein writes, 160 degrees, that's, you're pretty sure it's yad zeletzbo. Actually, there's a contradiction around Moshe. One place writes 160, one place writes 175. Let's take the 160 figure. So that, once you reach 160, then it's permissible, according to the conventional wisdom, to reheat it on Shabbos. Even though, here's the conventional wisdom, which I'm not going to lie, you can see in a minute, even though in the second heating, which is done on Shabbos, it can reach 212. You just take it and put it directly on the fire to hear it whistle. Right? And when I grew up, we didn't have the urns. The urns are, I was a little kid. No urns. You had a good old-fashioned kettle which whistled. And we knew that on Friday afternoon before Shabbos, it had a whistle. It had a whistle to indicate the water was completely boiled. Then you would move it a little bit off, and it was back, whatever that word, which we'll get to later. But that's how we used to wait till it whistled. All right. But what happens if it doesn't whistle? It just gets hot, yes. And then you push it off and it shouldn't start boiling out. And then on Shabbos, you want to put it directly on the fire somehow in a permissible fashion. And now it's going to reach 212 degrees and start whistling for the first time. So the conventional wisdom is that it's okay. Why is it okay? Because look, they say, when it comes to water, the cutoff point between hot and cold is Yatzel Letesbo. And once it reaches Yatzel Letesbo, let's assume the high version of Yatzel Letesbo, 160 degrees. And once it reaches that point, there's nothing else to add. It's as high as it can go. It hits 160, that's it. So it's considered Mavushel. And now, if I move it on Shabbos closer, it goes to 160, then it went down to 110, to 100. Then I move it back to the fire, now it goes up to 212. So big deal, what did I do wrong? I didn't do anything wrong. Because Ein Bishalach HaBishal, since the Ramah's lean, as long as it didn't go down to room temperature. So 100% fine, that's the conventional wisdom, which has been printed explicitly by Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal. A number of others seem to agree. However, I have to be honest, I cannot tell a lie. I think it's prohibited. What can I do? My logic is as follows. My logic is that just as we follow when it comes to salads, that the Shulchan Aruch rules that it's half cooked on Friday, you may not complete the cooking process on Shabbos. Because although it was considered halachically cooked at the halfway point, but still it's not fit for real use until it's, for most people we're not bandits, until it's fully cooked. By the same token, if you have water which is 160 degrees, and I'm not an expert in making tea, but my understanding is that's not hot enough. I don't know how hot the water in the urn is. I don't know how hot it is. I think it's 180 degrees, if I'm not mistaken. All right, correct? That makes sense? I think so. It's not 180 degrees. If the urn is working. It's not working. It's a problem. But I think it's 180 degrees. That's hot enough to make tea. 160 is not. So in my opinion, if you take 160 degree water on Friday, and you very nice, 160 degrees, you move it off, go down to 100, move it back at the 212, you are making this water fully cooked, for the first time in its history. And that seems to be the possibility of an Issur min HaTorah. And because of that possibility, I cannot allow it. I cannot permit it. I have to tell you an honest truth. I thought I was the only person in the world whistling Dixie. I thought I was the only one in the world that had this stringency. But seek and ye shall find. I knew where to look. I found it there from Bnei Brak by the famous Rabbi Binyamin Zilber, one of the really tremendous going in Talmud Chacham. He was able to go to Bris Olam, and guess what? He said, like me, he said, no way to look. You don't look for stringency, but here I felt it, and I phoned, that someone has to say, like, I found it. He says exactly that, and I think for the same, I think it's right. So I think if you plan to play around with your hot water kettle here and there, you make sure the whistles. Tradition I have my parents home, that's the whistle before Shabbos. Otherwise, don't. Today, most people don't even have kettles anymore. That was in the electric urns. But of course, see, this is relevant for another reason, you see. You want a little bit of a background. Why is it that Some say that Yesh Bishalach HaBishal HaDavolach. Why is Lach different than Yavish? Let's talk tachlis here. Why does Shulchan Aruch say that meat, potatoes, chicken, ain't Bishalach HaBishal? Water, soup, Yesh Bishalach HaBishal. Why? What's the reason? Didn't make it up out of a clear blue sky. It's based on logic. The logic is that when it comes to salads, the definition of cooking is, I told you the first day, softening. You have a hard piece of meat, and you cook it, it's now soft. Even if it's put back into the refrigerator, it remains soft. Remember, the cooking process is not undone. It's still considered fully cooked. So you can't kill a dead dog, so you can't cook a cooked piece of meat. It's cooked already. When it comes to liquids, these authorities maintain, what's the definition of cooking? Definition of cooking liquids is what? Heat. So once it goes back to the fridge, it's no longer hot, or it stays out on the table, it's no longer hot, and it's reached the point that it's completely not hot. And if it's not hot, then you're starting all over again. So therefore, we have many poskim, including the Shulchan Aruch, say, Yesh Bishal Acha Bishal B'Dover Lach. If it's liquid, Yesh Bishal Acha Bishal. Makes sense, but it's the arbitrary. Oh, here's the problem. What do you do with water? So the Ramah says, if I make chicken soup, do you ever make chicken soup? I make chicken soup. And I put it in the refrigerator. And it's cool. And I put it back on Shabbos to reheat it. So if Ramah says that's strictly speaking, it's okay. Why? Because the cooking process was never undone. Even when the chicken soup was cold, it's not chicken and water. Chicken and water, you put the chicken in the pot, let's say you never heat it up. You put chicken and water in it. You get chicken slave with water. It's not chicken soup, it's just you would never want to drink that water. Terrible. So you cook it. Oh, then all the taste, the juice, the fat, the schmaltz, whatever comes out of the chicken, it goes into that water, giving it a really powerful taste. That's called chicken soup. You put it into the fridge, it still has that same taste. The problem. So the question is, what do you do with water? Water has no taste. So how come this, the Ramah seems to indicate that ein bishul acha bishul applies not only to chicken soup, but even to water. Water, which is boiled and cooled down, is at first glance exactly identical to water which was never boiled. It tastes the same. Yes?
I think we're saying
like,
but when you boil the water, it purifies it, so there is
a chicken. That's the answer. When you boil water, it gets rid of the germs. This is well known in the modern medicine. Heaven knows, it pasteurizes. You heat it up, it kills the germs.
Huh?
Different germs. I got rid of those germs. Those germs are gone.
The
molecular
structure is broken
up,
and that's what it is.
Okay, whatever. I don't know about that. I'm not asking the molecular structure. I know it kills the germs. But wait a second. Comes Rabbi Eider with the following very powerful question. He says, that's true. When are germs killed? Who else? I have a lot of scientists here, I see. Germs are killed? 212. All right, 190 kills, maybe kills germs, or perhaps. But you read Yatza Lenisco. Yatza Lenisco could be as low as 120 degrees. 30, 40, 50, even 60. I don't know if that's a, what is pasteurization? What are they using pasteurization? Anybody know? High, right? They usually go a little bit high. They usually go pretty high. It's 180, 190, I think they usually have to pasteurize. 70 at least to pasteurize. So Rabbi Eider asks, if the Chazanish's logic is correct, that the reason that water is considered cooked, irreversibly cooked, if you will, is because it kills the germs, and having it permitted if it only reached 160 degrees, it doesn't kill the germs. So you start saying, well, it kills some of the germs. Some of the germs. Some of them probably killed the minute it reaches about room temperature, no? What about scientists? Probably if it reaches a little, everybody starts killing some of the germs. How can you go with that? So I thought if I'm right, me and Rabbi Zilber, if we are right, that the only time you say, ain bishul acha bishul, but when it comes to water, if it was already boiled or close to it, at least 180, 190 degrees, that's fit to be used for tea. That's the criterion. So once it's fit to be used for tea, then it's already hot enough to kill the germs. So this chumrah forgive me for telling it to you, but I can't help it, how to get a birth myself. This Chumash also will explain why the principle of Bishul Rav HaBishul, Ein Bishul Rav HaBishul applies even to water, strictly speaking, according to the Rambam. All right, got that clear? Any questions? You have to always ask questions, otherwise you won't get it clear. Yes? I wouldn't allow that. I would not allow rare meat to be reheated on Shabbos. You know why? Because in my opinion, rare meat does not fall into the category of mevushal kol tzarko. Mevushal kol tzarko seems to me as to be defined by the majority. You can't, just because something like that meat rare, I mean, Ben Drusor likes to have it half cooked. Some of this rare stuff looks to me like Ben Drusor would eat it. That's so rare. It's unbelievable how rare it is. I'm afraid of germs taking through it. It's so rare. It's so rare. It's so rare. I don't like this rare stuff. It could be a question of not being fully cooked before Shabbos. I think it has to be really. This reminds me of the fascinating exchange between two Gedolim. Rav Moshe Zatzal and Lahavdil and Chaim Lachaim of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Back and forth, a couple of letters about, what's it about? Some people with chones. About the people that have chones, that there's meat in the chones, the meat has bones, and there's a marrow in the bones cooked before Shabbos. Back and forth, they stuff the marrow, they beat the marrow. Unbelievable. We see how much they're meticulous. That fully cooked has to be fully cooked. Fully cooked, and therefore rare steak. Because I wouldn't eat it up on Shabbos. I'd be afraid. Yes.
If you had a kettle of milk, for example.
A kettle of milk.
It's also, the whole thing is also cooked. It's also been pre-cooked, and the milk has been pasteurized.
It seems to me that when it comes to other liquids, once it's reached pasteurization, right? We have to treat this being different. We would not apply this stringency. Don't let me be worse than I am. I am eliminating my stringency to water. If we have milk, which has been pasteurized, we treat it as being cooked, and we'd be permitted to recook it. Minat Torah, when we pass it, on Shabbos. Of course, by rabbinic law, we don't allow it, as you mentioned, the Ramah for prohibitive, but as I told you earlier, in a cliché, it's okay. That's why you're permitted to put milk into your coffee. How do you do that on Shabbos? Pour a bowl, you make a cup of coffee, you put the milk in. How's that? You get the same answer again. Why? Because number one, it's a cliché. Number two, it's liquid, which has already been previously cooked. So to make all these stringencies, like Yeshvishalach, Abishah, Padavalach, and Klisheni, this far we don't go. And even I told you before, even the Mishnah Berurah agreed to that. His example is putting the scents into the hot water. Same thing as putting the milk into the coffee. It's exactly the same thing. If it had never been cooked, that's what all the Baba Cherebi and the Mishnah Berurah have this dispute. Any more questions? It's very important to ask. Don't be embarrassed to ask. Don't be embarrassed. You can ask me now. Clear? Is this clear? Clear as mud? Clear as what? Okay. Yes? I told you. Yesh Vishalach HaBishul is a stringency which is accepted by the Rambam. He says that strictly speaking, you don't have to aim Vishalach HaBishul Balach, but we are machmer unless it was remained above room temperature. That's A. B, I added something. What I added was that this whole dispute about Vishalach HaBishul Balach is assuming that it once whistled if it's water, or if it's once heated, if other liquids. But if it's water which never whistles, which is never boiling, or never close to boiling, never 180 degrees, which would never be usable to make tea, then if you want to make that reach 180 for the first time on Shabbos, in my opinion, it's prohibited. Me and Rabbi Zilber say it's prohibited. So I wouldn't allow that. But only by water, I told you, only by water. Okay, is everything clear? I really want to make sure that we've got everything. I believe, if I may be wrong, that we covered almost all of the laws of cooking proper. Is there anything which you know about, which I forgot to talk about, ask me now. Speak now or later. But I mean, about anything, ask me now. I must be missing something. I want to grab my Ivan's book. He has a table of contents year long. I forgot.
What if something's frozen, but it was cooked already, and you want to reheat it?
I know what you mean. You don't mean frozen meat. You mean frozen chicken soup.
Frozen meat.
Of course, it's okay. That's a salad. Salad. Was a solid, is a solid, and will be a solid. The difference between which I wanted to, what I forgot, so I keep reminding you. If it's solid now, it's going to become liquid. It's going to melt. Should we say a gravy, congealed gravy? Should we say that congealed gravy is treated as a solid, because right now it's solid? Or should we say congealed gravy is treated as a liquid, because it's going to become a liquid? Like a ben sora or mora, shame sofa, right? It's going to become liquid, so we should prohibit it right now. You already mentioned the stringency when it came to coffee, that we put a coffee in a cliche, you don't put the water over the coffee, why not? Coffee is a solid, but since it dissolves, it becomes a liquid, so we should maybe give it the stringency of liquid already now. Perhaps, that's what's quoted by the Mishnah Berurah. A similar situation applies to gravy. Here we say that it's now a solid, it's going to become a liquid. So may you reheat it or not? That's a good question. So the Rabbi Avraham says yes, based on the Din of Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says it's permissible to put something which is solid, which is going to become reheated to reach out to lettuce bowl, even though the fat which has congealed will now melt. So writes the Shulchan Aruch. Now, it's not that relevant to us for the following reason, because, see, I told you earlier that there are more quotes to strict view that it's prohibited for a completely different reason. Forget about bishop. It's called buktsa. It's called nola, a change of state, which we'll come to much later. So therefore, it's not that relevant for us. But there are some cases where we are lenient with Sora, where it's needed or something like that, or it's a tiny amount. You see, I always forget things. We said before like this. Solids, listen carefully. Solids, we hold ain't bishul like a bishul. No ands, no ifs, and no buts. Liquids are practices to accept the stringency of bishul like a bishul if it's done directly. What happens in the following case? I have a combination, a combo. It's mostly solid, but partially liquid. This happens very frequently. It's mostly solid, partially liquid. Can I reheat that or not? I'll tell you why not. You get the mostly. What do I do with the minority of liquid? The minority of liquid, which I, it's not an insignificant minority. It's something which you can, you know, it has significance. That minority of liquid I intend to heat up on Shabbos. I want you to apply the principle of the stringency of the H, Bishop, Akha, Bishop, the double A. That's how we accept the halacha. If you have solid and liquid together, you may not heat it up on Shabbos. This could be relevant with gravy, right? You have meat and gravy. You have meat with gravy, there's plenty of meat, plenty of gravy. You know the meat is a majority, you're not permitted to put that, heat that up on Shabbos because of the Yesh Bishol Afa Bishol Adav Alach, there's not stringency. That's what's called the Halach. However, the Pesukim say, teeny, teeny amount, a small little amount on top of the meat, a little bit of liquid, you can't, you know, how much can you shake it off? Then we accept the leniency. It's this is reminiscent of the second teacup or the ladle back on the soup. A small, tiny amount, which we can just sort of disregard. Just as we disregard it in Hilchos Bishul, so too we disregard it in Hilchos Mukta. Small little amount, if it's solid, which turns into liquid, is also disregarded. If it's liquid to begin with, we disregard it, as we explained before. Bishul after Bishul is only a stream, so he doesn't apply over tiny amounts. So too, if it was a little bit of solid and turned into liquid, we also disregard it. This is also only a stringency of converting solids to liquids. That's the bottom line. If you have meat or chicken with a little bit of gravy, so you can be lenient. Reheat it. If there's a lot of gravy, then you may not, whether it's solid or whether it's liquid. If it's liquid because of Bishul after Bishul Balat, if it's solid because of Nola, it looks like. Either way, you get rid of most of the gravy. A little bit you can't get rid of, that's okay. Alright, what else did I leave out? Yes?
Wait, so then it's okay if you take it out in the meat pan, even though you know the little gravy now.
A little bit is okay. A little bit. They never made the spinach with a little tiny bit. Yes?
What about something like a soft vegetable? Yeah, let's say vegetables that were
we're fried, and there's like
a little bit of liquid in it because it's a little bit oily. And then there's soft
vegetables
and onions and things like that.
So you
want to reheat it
on Shabbos?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes? That's considered a solid. Yes. Chicken soup, not based on beef, but because it's now going to melt into a liquid, unless you're a Sfari. Actually, yeah, you're a Sfari, it'll be okay. Shulchan Aruch is okay. Ashkenazim can't do it. If you're a Muslim, it changes state. We have there's a way to get around that, by the way. There's a trick. There is a trick. You want to take a trick? Don't put it into an empty pot. Put it into something which is already there beforehand. It'll have to be some kind of, I don't know what, hot water or something like that. It's going to be cold, you can't cook it. You get some kind of, I don't know what you would do, you have some hot water, very hot water, and when you melt the chicken soup, heat it, and it starts melting into the water, so then we are leaving as far as changing state. That's not a Bishul question, it's a Mukti question. We'll get to it later. And let it melt on Shabbos? It's the same problem. Change the state on Shabbos, the problem even if you didn't do anything, not by yourself. I have to ask, we'll get to all this later, but ice cube didn't freeze or melting ice cube is the problem. Yes? Do what?
The
Shulchan Aruch said that congealed gravy is permissible to be eaten. Because it starts off now in the salad. And the fact that it converts to liquid doesn't bother the Shulchan Aruch. Doesn't bother. Now, we have the stringency, but if it changes the same, we don't use it. But that stringency is only what we call a chatchila, ideally, it just doesn't give you the ingredient. If you put some hot water on the bottom, it can even be obviated completely. So there is, it is relevant, this whole discussion. Can't think of any relevance. Okay. I believe we've now finished more or less, but I'm sure you have something out. The law of the Bishul problem. Yes. They're exactly the same. One thing is, the chicken soup, you say, is the major ingredient, is the only ingredient. Whereas a little bit of congealed gravy, a tiny bit, a small amount, so we have more ground to be lenient. Small amount, it starts off as solid, it's not proper visual, as far as the idea of changing state, so it's a small amount. That's the difference. Yes? Whoop! Another dirty word again. I can't answer the question, we have to have the. Or if we have to, at long last, we're not coming to that grand finale, which we'll definitely not finish tonight. I give you my word, we will not finish it tonight. Will we finish it next week? No guarantee either. It's actually, I analyze this is very important. Okay, the most important part of running a kitchen. There is, after one takes into account all the prohibitions of cooking and can construct them a way in which the prohibitions do not exist. This is by generally speaking for the taking advantage of the principle of what? So, hey, Bishol, Achar Bishol. We then enter into an entire new series of prohibitions. An entirely new series of prohibitions. And the primary one is what we call Hachazara, which sometimes we get to be called Chazara. The more grammatically correct term is Hachazara. Hachazara means, want to get back the territories. So Hachazara means to return, to put something back on. This is about habit. Hachazara is putting it back on the fire. This is used in contrast to another term which is called Shehiya. What does Shehiya mean? Leaving something on the fire from before shots. So let's give a very brief overview. Let me add another term. There's Shehiya, which is the most lenient of all, because you're doing it under the four Shabbos. Then there's Hachzara, because you're returning them to the fire on Shabbos. And then, it's something which is called, it's an important term to know now, I'll tell you up front, I'll call it, for the lack of a better term, although some people use all kinds of terms, I'll call it, to give my language, Nisina Mechadosh. A little bit not so poetic. Nisina Mechadosh means putting it on the fire. What does Mechadosh mean? From scratch, anew. It's not called returning to the fire, it's called putting it on for the first time. Mechadosh. Mechadosh means to start from scratch. So there's three different levels, going from an increasing severity order. Shehiya is the least severe, Achzara is more serious, and the Sina Mechadosh is the most serious. Now, question. Why would the rabbis introduce additional stringencies if Bishul is avoided? You're not doing any Bishul, so what's the problem? So here, there's an entire discussion in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch. Very complicated. It's not really in Siman Shin Yud Ches, which we've been discussing until now. It goes way back in Siman Reish Nun Gimel. I'll look it up in the Shabur or in English, and you'll find it. The reason why the rabbis prohibited Shehiya is a three-word reason. Three words, which everyone accepts. That is, Shema, perhaps, Yechate, he will stoke Vigacholim, the coals. In the old days, they heated with coals. And the rabbis were afraid, yeah, you look very nice to leave it on the fire for the four Shabbos. Next thing you know, in your effort to hasten the cooking process, you will stoke the coals. And by stoking the coals, you'll be in violation of an Av Malacha, of one of the 39 categories of work. Not Bishul, mind you. Not Bishul. Not do with Bishul. Who knows what the Malacha is called when you stoke coal? Everybody know, yeah? Not Kiboy, no. Kiboy is a minor problem, relatively speaking. That's extinguishing. What's the proof side of that? Av-ara. Av-ara means lighting a fire or increasing a fire. I guess you don't play with coals, good. But if you stoke coals, what happens to some of the embers that are dark will now suddenly, become red hot. That's called Av-ara. Av-ara is one of the 39 categories of work prohibited on Shabbos. Therefore, the rabbis did not allow you to leave food on the fire for Shabbos, the fear that you may stoke those coals on Shabbos without realizing it, without thinking about it, in order to hasten the cooking process. That's called Isur of Shehiyah. If you have a question, you can ask me now. Okay. Hachazara. Why is Hachazara prohibited? Well, it's the same thing. Is he heating the coals again? Well. Here is a major dispute. Some say that Hakazara is all Shabby Tanakh Peshir. I can't play guitar or piano, take non-electrical devices for the moment. I can't play guitar or piano on Shabbos. You know why? The string will break and I'll fix it and it'll be terrible. Wait a minute. If I fix it, it's going to be a prohibition on Shabbos, of course, to keep it clean. Wait a second. Well, last time I heard, there was this rule out there. And this rule was called, you may have never heard of it, the rule was called Shvus de Shvus de Mokom Mitzvah, which means you're allowed to tell a non-Jew to do something which is rabbinically prohibited when a mitzvah is involved.